You've found the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Where There Is Hope. Does it feel like hope is easy for you personally? What about in the face of all of the big, even existential crises our society is facing? Let's take this time to cultivate a curiosity about hope and together try to see where there is hope.
Well, morning, everybody. Greg Meyer here. Glad to have you with us. Hope, huh? Anybody here have any issues weighing on them? Any at all? Couple? Yeah, if it wasn't so sad, it would be funny. It is. There is a lot of hope for. I think we all feel that way. There are problems today that feel bigger than normal. I mean, the stakes are high. In fact, sometimes it feels like the stakes are so high that, you know, it's just plain scary for us. So we have talked about the uncertainty of hope these last couple of weeks, and we've talked about it being a choice, a mode that we can practice. And, you know, hope is always a shot in the dark. That's why it's hope, right? It is not wishful thinking, on the other hand. It isn't sitting back and wishing. No, hoping things could be different. That's not what it's about. Like I started out last week, and I said, you know, you have all heard that hope is not a plan, right? Hope is not a plan. That's true. But hope can have a plan. And that's where we want to go today. We want to look at hope with a plan. And so take another look at what that all looks like. And one thing I can tell you, or probably just remind you of, because this is something you know already, but when we talk about the kind of plan that hope has, it isn't a step-by-step process that simply accomplishes the task. You know, whether it's hope about getting another job, starting a business, hope about maybe you have in your relationship that's in your marriage, or you're with your partner, or about your kids, or about your parents, whatever it is, it's, you know, around your health. A plan for hope is more about what you bring to the challenge than just what you do, right? Because realizing hope is more like what you take along on a backpacking trek than it is how you cook that recipe for dinner. And so it's, what do we equip ourselves? What do we bring along? And what are you going to be carrying in that backpack of hope? So last week, to start to explore that, we talked about, in fact, I did a really, really deep dive into one of the ancient stories from the Bible, the story of Abraham. And I did it not because if the Bible says it, that's what's true and that's what you're supposed to do, because it just plain doesn't work that way. I did it because that story was the distillation of experience and wisdom from countless generations who lived and wanted to pass on a message about how complicated hope is and how we can hold on to it, even when it feels impossible. And wanted us to encourage us and let us see how that can be played out. So this week, what I want to do is to take a much smaller look at another one of those ancient stories to be able to talk about this plan for hope. And it's about the origin of the central hope, the central promise of the people of Israel, one that Abraham had the first very small glimpses of, but was really, again, you know, that distillation of their experience and of their hopes. It's the story of Moses. It's found in Exodus chapter 3. So this, you had the story of Abraham, and then this is many, many generations later, you get to Moses. And it's in Exodus chapter 3. It's a great thing. Read chapter 3. Take some time. Remember, you got to span quite a few thousand years of culture and language and life experience, cosmology, in order to understand it. But take some time and read that chapter this week. And it's the story that tells about when he received this call to do the impossible. He got this call to do the impossible, to set Israel free from slavery to Egypt, and to lead them to another land, a new land, a promised land for them. Now, in this story, like all these stories, there's no handy-dandy formula. You know, the Bible never, these are these three steps too. No, they just take us on this journey and let us live in it and soak it up and kind of see what's going on there. And this story from Moses and of his journey of hope starts with him realizing that something is wrong. It starts with something that's wrong. So really, this is the beginning. Where does the plan start? You name the problem, right? Name the problem. In this case, It's Yahweh, right? Yahweh, I am who I am, also known as God, or the Lord. Whenever you see the Lord written in your Bible, the name there is actually Yahweh. It's a name, and it translates out as I am who I am. So that's what you can hear me saying a lot. And so I am who I am spells out the problem. He says, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their suffering. So he's, it's terrible. I can't take anymore. We got to do something about this. Now, this is a 3,000-year-old saga, and it's how it talks, how, you know, it says things happened. Well, how did it actually happen? I mean, really kind of not a terribly important point, but how was Moses stirred to understand that there was a problem and to name it and to realize enough is enough? We've got to do something about this. We've got to create some hope around this. So, name your problem. Yours too. She points back at me. Okay, name your problem. So what are your problems? We talked about that. We spent quite a bit of time on that the first week. But what are your problems? You'll find there's a little square on the bottom left. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But that might be not a bad place to just make a quick note. Like, what is one personal problem that you probably we could use some hope around? Maybe what's one hope that's sort of in your closer circle of things? Not just you, but something a little bit bigger around your arms. And then what's one that's more societal or global? If you're like me, you could not fit them all in that box. Pick one. Just pick one. Note it there as we talk. Okay, so, you know, that's something to do. So that he names a problem. Then the next piece is he pictures the destination. Where is he headed in order to do this problem? What would it look like if it was different? It's not enough to know something is wrong. What is your vision of something being better? This is what we call progress, right? Making something better. You have hope because there's a problem that you can name, and you've got a vision that it might be different. That's the progress you're talking about, okay? What does that look like? So Yahweh, God, tells Moses it is to deliver them from the Egyptians, to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Okay, I have some problems relating to a land flowing with milk and honey. You know, coffee and chocolate, beer and pretzels, I could relate to a little bit better. But what's neat there is, even though we don't understand so much like what was so great about a land flowing with milk and honey, is how picturable it was, right? It's just something that people could imagine and see and to chase after. Now, the truth is, in almost all of our ambitious hopes, we really have no idea what it's actually going to look like when we get there, right? But we need a placeholder for it. We need something that gives us something to be moving towards. When they did get there, there weren't actually like rivers flowing with milk and honey, right? That was figurative, but it gave them the idea of the kind of a fertile, hospitable, wonderful place that they could be going to. Fabric was just a dream once. I remember when we started this whole thing, I had an image in my mind, sort of what it would all be like, and I could tell people about that and give people a lot of energy and excitement about it, but I, you know, didn't know about these curtains and these chairs and you people and exactly where it would be or anything like that, but I was able to communicate, like, what really mattered about when we get there, and that is what has been true. So over the years, it's evolved, and it's turned into this today, and I can't really even remember maybe what was in my head because it all grew so slowly. But I needed that picture, and we need this picture to continue to chase it and to follow after it. Then the next crucial thing for that backpack, something that we often leave out because of the uncertainty of hope, right? And that kind of makes us a little bit timid to share with other people because we don't really know if it's going to work out. And, you know, I'm not sure if anybody else is really that excited about what I'm excited about. And by the way, what if it doesn't work and I'm going to end up looking really stupid? So maybe I shouldn't tell anybody else about it. I mean, those are all the wrong reactions, right? No, the next thing to do is to get support from other people. Get support from other people. You can't do this alone. Whatever it is you're hoping about. And you shouldn't be doing it alone. There are others that have the same hope as you. There are others who have been working on it for a long time. There are others who know something about getting there that you don't know yet that can help a lot with what you're trying to do. Even on those really personal things, like when you have that problem in your relationship, your primary life relationship, or something at work where you just think, you know, just me and how am I going to change all this and do all this, you'd be surprised at how many other times that person that you think is against you, well, maybe you're against each other right now, but you both have the same hope. You want it to be better. You probably both have a vision of what that relationship, what that situation could be like. And you're both, well, maybe those aren't quite the same. You would rather work with each other than against each other to get there. Get support from other people. Yahweh immediately let Moses know that I am who I am would be with him all the way. And then he tells him, go and assemble the elders of Israel and tell them what you're going to do. Now, I mean, that's kind of a big ask, right? But you have no idea. I mean, if you know the story of Exodus, you can go back and watch a Disney film. What was it, Prince of Egypt or something like that? Actually does a pretty good job with the story. But Moses had burned all of his bridges with the leaders of Israel. So like going back there and doing that is, whoa, there's a lot I got to overcome to go and kind of swallow my pride and to take that risk, to hope for that even, but get support from others. So name the problem, picture the destination, get support, and then take a first step. Take a first step. In Moses' story, it's pretty obvious, and it's a pretty big step. Yahweh, God, tells him, so come, I'll send you to Pharaoh to bring my people out of Egypt. It's kind of like, you know, someone telling you, okay, for starters, I'd like you to go talk to Vladimir Putin and tell him to let the Ukrainians, you know, go. I mean, this is a big ask. This is the first step. He's telling, you know, this is what I want you to do. Now, your first step may not be that big and bold, all right? It doesn't have to be. That's not the point. The point is that you begin. You see, it isn't what your first step accomplishes that is so important. It is what it starts. That is what is important about that first step. Melissa mentioned this just a couple weeks ago. That first step, it is so crucial. It will not be your last step, all right? So take some pressure off of your first step. It isn't going to solve the problem. Remember, you probably don't even really know what the destination is that you're heading to because you're so far away from it. You see the problem now. You don't know what that destination is going to be like. So having it all figured out, having all the steps and being able to do all the steps to get there is just not going to happen. I mean, that's a recipe for paralysis, not for progress. So what is your first step? Try something. Learn. Then try what's next. Hope is a mode of practice. So get in the mode and start practicing. Get in the mode and start practicing. And that's hard. So do it with others and keep that vision in front of you. If you're in groups, if you're not, find a group to spend time with because you got to process this stuff. But if you're in a group, what if each of you came with, you know, whatever vulnerability you're up for with, you could name one of your problems, and you could maybe tell a story of what it looked like when you'd gotten to the other side, and you could say who is going to support you on this, who are you going to get involved, and what your next step is going to be. What if you could do that together? That'd be some pretty amazing stuff. Okay, so you name it, you picture it, you get the support, you take that first step, and then you do what you can, and you let go of the rest. You do what you can, and you let go of the rest. And these next five words are important, at least for right now. Right? Let go of the rest, at least for right now. No, you did not solve the problem. What you did wasn't enough. It all looks impossible. It all looks daunting yet. But guess what? You can't carry that all yet. You're not supposed to. You're all thinking half full or half empty, right? No. How much do you think this weighs? How much do you think this weighs? Any call out? 2 pounds.
9 ounces.
9 ounces. Okay, you're all working on that really hard, and I'm going to tell you, I don't care how much it weighs. Because it isn't how much it weighs. It's obviously not that much, right? The point isn't how much it weighs, it's how long I try to hold it. Like, I can hold it here, piece of cake. I could do this for a couple minutes, piece of cake. After an hour, I'd be hurting. If I did this until tomorrow, I would have damaged some of the ligaments in my arm, my shoulder, probably would have messed up my back a little bit, just for this, what, Sage, 9 ounces, you know? It isn't how much it is, it's you can't carry these things that long. We try to carry stuff that doesn't belong to us and that we can't handle right now way too long sometimes, and we need to let it go. You know, when we do that, when we carry these things that we aren't supposed to be carrying yet, we do the same emotional damage to us that something like this does in terms of physical damage. We start creating despair. We start creating hopelessness in us because we aren't doing what we could be doing. I know it often feels inadequate, but take one step at a time and allow yourself the permission to find joy, to be thankful, to celebrate the things in life that fuel you and allow you to hold on to that one step and to take another step later on. Moses was dealing with the same problem. He couldn't let go of the rest, as the story goes. He keeps finding reasons why this isn't going to work, why he can't possibly do it. He keeps worrying about what's going to happen then and what's going to happen then. And the answer that God keeps giving him, Yahweh keeps giving him, is, I'll show you later, or I will be with you. Basically, he's saying, don't worry about that right now. When we get to that bridge, we're going to cross it, okay? This is kind of how it works, like I said before, when we worry about these things, we're trying to make it like the recipe, but this is not like a chef baking a cake. This is not like a contractor building a house. This is not like a surgeon performing an operation on a patient, all right? You don't know the answers. You can't do everything that needs to be done. Do what you can. Let go of the rest, at least for now. So we talk about something rather regularly here at Fabric that I think really helps right now with this. And that is our circle of influence and circle of concern that we all have. Let me just briefly fill you in on it. So we all have this circle of influence, this circle of concern. This circle is huge for us. It has all the things that we're worried about. Any of those hopes, those dreams, those problems that you listed, they're certainly in there, but there's a lot more. There's so many things that we're concerned about in this world, all right? And that's natural. I mean, we should all have that. Now, inside of that circle of concern is a smaller circle, and that is your circle of influence. These are the things within all of your concerns that you can actually do something about. You've got some reach in them. You've got some potential. You can budge these things. Now, you know, we forget sometimes and we think they're the same, but they aren't. Now, your first step needs to be where? In your circle of influence, right? Right, in your circle of influence. That's not going to solve everything in your circle of concern, but it isn't how you get to your circle of concern, is it? All right, here's the deal. Staying within your circle of influence does not mean that you have given up on all of your concerns. It is your pathway to all of those concerns. This is what happens. People that operate in their circle of concern outside of their circle of influence, they tend to be very frustrated people because they don't have any influence. They can't change the things that they're worried about and working on so hard. They tend to not attract cooperation. Other people don't really want to work with them because they see them, just banging against a brick wall all the time and nothing ever happening because of it. And then also, their circle of influence actually starts shrinking because they never operate in it. They aren't exercising it. They aren't developing their influence around other people. So their circle of influence continues to shrink, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. People who focus on their circle of influence, what they can do there, they have a very different experience. They tend to be encouraged. They tend to get motivated by it because they're doing something. Even though it might be small, it's having some impact, and it's helping them see what they can do next. They are also attracting cooperation. Who who doesn't want to work with someone else who seems to know how to get things done and is excited about it and is encouraged about it? I want to be with that person. And then also they find that their circle of influence is increasing. It's growing. They are able gradually to touch other things that were in the circle that are in the circle of concern that they couldn't reach before. So an important thing. So make your first step be something in your circle of influence. Don't worry that it's inadequate to the greater need. That is to be expected. This is not your only step. This is your first step. It isn't necessarily what it accomplishes. It's what begins that's so important. Turn to a person next to you and tell them, take your first step inside your circle of influence. I'm serious. Do it. Make your first step in your circle of influence. Timothy? Sounds familiar. Take your first step in your circle of influence. Then take another step, and that as it grows. Good. All right, sorry. This is something, right? We're creating a mode to practice, not just to hear me talk about. A mode to practice. Okay, now we need to talk about problems. All right, we need to talk about problems. This book, the Bible, is a book all about problems. Talk about it how you want. Language of sin is used for a long time. It's about a separation from God and from one another and from this world. It's talking about our own brokenness. And then it's talking about a vision and a way to live in a way that overcomes that, right? About problems and the solutions, a vision of a hope that can get beyond it. It's talking about how we are unwoven, how we are fraying from that fabric of existence that we are meant to be, that we are created to be a part of, and how we can reweave all of that together. Talk about how you may, but that's sort of what it's about. Now, hope and problems belong together. Hopes depend on problems. Have you ever heard of anybody that had hopes about something that wasn't a problem? I mean, that was already just the way it was supposed to be that they wanted, and there was no issues with it. I mean, why are you hoping? I mean, what are you hoping for, right? Except that there's something that needs solving, something that could be better, that could be bigger, that could be more whole, whatever it might happen to be. Problems aren't the problem. A lack of hope to overcome them, that's the problem. Now, we'd like to get rid of problems, but actually, like I said, they are part of the plan. And it works like this. You're going to find that little square, boom, like that, up there. So problems, at least potentially, can create hope, right? And hope, then, can have a plan. And that plan can create a solution. And then this is the kicker. That solution always creates more problems. It does. Stuff that you weren't looking for, stuff you didn't intend, something you didn't see coming, something you couldn't control. I mean, somehow you let some sort of genie out of a box and something else is going to happen. Now, don't let that discourage you. Okay, it will discourage you. And that's okay because discouragement is part of hope as well. Right? Hope is always hoping. You know, it's discouragement that goes along with it all the way. So that's okay. It's always mixed in. But don't get stuck in that. This is a circle, right? Because those more problems that solution created are what? They are going to generate more hope, which will generate more plans, which can generate more solutions, which will create a whole another raft of new problems. Now, it's easy to feel that wasn't really progress, right? Because, I mean, think of our present situation. We've got problems, we've got inequities, we've got dead ends, and greater problems that were created by progress, right? By people's solutions that have gone on in earlier generations. You know, whether we're talking about race, whether we're talking about climate, the way our economic systems work, our political systems, yes, those are problems. Yes, a lot of our previous solutions created them. Yes, they are unacceptable. People, maybe you, maybe me, maybe the systems, maybe our ancestors, they should have known better and they should have done better, but they won't be the last ones that will say that. That's going to be every generation's solutions that they bring to their problems. What I would challenge And I know this is something to wrestle with, and it'd be fun to debate more with some of you, but I would challenge that what hope says, what hope would say, isn't that it wasn't really progress, all these things that we've done that that maybe have created, you know, more problems. Hope would say, though, it isn't that that wasn't progress, but that progress isn't done yet. And progress is never done. Progress is never done. To say because it hasn't delivered everything, because it has created more problems, doesn't mean that it hadn't been worth hoping for. Because it was incomplete, because it was short-sighted, because it was unfair, doesn't mean in some ways it wasn't progress. We just can't leave it there. Progress isn't done yet. Progress, like everything in life, is not linear. Progress has its ups and its downs. It is never just better and then better and then better. To be encouraged by what progress has been made doesn't mean that we've resigned ourselves to accept the imperfections that were bred into the system. It doesn't mean that we are no longer passionate about the things that are left to do. No, it doesn't. Remember from last week, discouragement, disappointment, they are parts of hope, not a sign that there is no hope. As we saw last week in Abraham's story, hope goes uphill, trudging against the gravity, getting hot and sweaty, trying to make it someplace that's really difficult, and it sometimes goes downhill, following the gravity, blowing through the breeze, just enjoying the free ride of it where it's encouraging and wonderful. Those Israelites that Moses led into the wilderness, to free them from Egypt, they were all excited when the journey got going, but then they found themselves in the wilderness for a long time, and they didn't like it. So many times they said, I wish we were still just slaves back in Egypt. I wish it just hadn't done this to us. Because, I mean, at least we knew where our meal was coming from and stuff like that. And Moses really couldn't point at a whole lot. He said, we're here, and this is tough, and I don't know when we're going to get out. But we're going, we're doing what we need to do. We're doing what we can do right now. Steve Pinkers, who wrote Enlightenment Now, and who has really dug into this concept of progress from as methodical and critical type of manner as one could possibly imagine, he concludes this. The unsolved problems today are gargantuan, but we must see them as problems to be solved, not apocalypses in the waiting. I think that's pretty darn true. Hope that creates plans, that creates solutions, that create more problems, tells us this. Solve the problems you see, and then watch for the ones you create or that you leave behind. Solve the problems you see, and then watch for the ones you've created or the ones that you maybe unknowingly left behind. Now, I don't know if you agree with that, but I don't think that I'm trying to tell you this to make you feel better about the way everything is going, because I'm not trying to make you feel better. In fact, the situation might actually be worse than what we would imagine. What I'm trying to do is help you understand how hope works. And what I'm saying is, this is how hope works. It isn't a sign that hope is not working. It is messy. It is hard. It doesn't always pan out. But that's how hope works. That's how hope works. So while you're wrestling with that, let me look at one more thing that needs to be in your backpack for hope, and that is how you take in the news. So good news and bad news, all right? So don't just pay attention to the bad news. Watch for the good news. Watch for the good news because, well, you know, right? You know, because it's depressing? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not meaning here to beat up on the media telling you that, you know, things really aren't as bad as it's always being painted. Now, you know, they're probably pretty darn accurate. In fact, it might even be worse in some cases. What I'm saying is that there is a larger story that isn't in the news that we need to be attentive to if we care about hope and if we want to understand how our hope is making progress. The Bible, is pretty silent on the 24-hour news cycle. Surprise, surprise. But, you know what it does? The Bible actually comments on it very clearly in an indirect way, because the Bible is constantly telling us to have a long-haul view of life and of what we do and our presence and our calling and what we do in the world, right? You know, it says, no, short-term, superficial, short-sighted, no. Don't pay attention to that stuff. I mean, take note of it because it's probably giving you some important information. But long haul, right? Right? Watch for the good news, not just the bad news. All right. So you need to watch for the good news as well as the bad news because, well, here's some stories that never happened. LaToya arrived safely at her office for the 150th day in a row. Billy did his homework again. There was a peaceful transfer of power from one president to another 44 times in a row. 20 people didn't die yesterday because they wore their seatbelt. We don't hear those stories. News is about what happened, not what didn't happen, right? And the signs of hope are often hidden in what didn't happen, so it couldn't be reported. So let's take one of the most frightening of our current crises, climate change. We aren't doing enough, are we? No, we aren't, and I'm scared. But what if we had been doing nothing? What if we hadn't started improving the gas mileage in our cars? What if there was absolutely no solar, no wind energy? What if we didn't have a recycling and an organics as well as our garbage bins, you know, with our houses or our apartments? What if we weren't improving the energy consumption of our appliances and the water that's being used by them? And, you know, personally and industrially, no, they aren't enough. We aren't there yet. It's too slow, I know. But it would be worse if we hadn't been doing that. Watch for the good news as well as the bad news, because that bad news is not going to motivate you. That good news, even though it's not enough, those are first steps that are, what, increasing our circle of influence, right? Okay. Here's another reason to look for good news, because the bad news comes too easily, and that is bad things happen quickly, and good things often develop slowly over time. Bad things usually happen quickly, and good things often develop slowly over time. A wildfire can wipe out a whole neighborhood in Colorado, New Mexico, California in a matter of hours. But that new sustainable city addition that is being planned for a period of 10 years that can be a model for how things can be different is also happening. But it's just not like, you know, they're 6 years down their hopeful planning to be able to maybe be able to do that doesn't make it, even though that is going to be, could be, maybe will be a major changer for sustainable livelihoods in the future. An election can reverse course on important human progress overnight. Insurrection in Washington can threaten democracy in a day. The murder of George Floyd can happen in 10 minutes. But what is going on in many other places at the same time? Slowly, methodically, uphill and downhill, building community support, infrastructure, nonprofits, creating movements that will not be stopped. In fact, they may be propelled by those horrible moments that get so much attention and let us think that everything is so bad in our world. Did you know that life expectancy in the U.S. Went from 47 in the year 1900 to 79 in the year 2000? That's a 68% increase in life expectancy here in the United States. But it took a century to do it, so it's not really news. It's not really news. Well, you know, it wasn't quite fair, right? I mean, white people made bigger advancements than black people. But did you also know in the last 30 years, the difference between the life expectancy of a black person and a white person has halved in the last 30 years? Problems yet. I'm not ready to rest on that and say, well, that was good enough. It's not good enough. But it's progress. And I can dream beyond that. And we can say, what's next? Let's make the what's next happen. Let's make this fair for everybody. That is a new problem we've identified now because it was one of the problems that our last solution created. Now, how can we solve that? How can we hope about it? How can we solve it? I know it's hard and slow to keep track of, but when we don't measure, when we don't note, when we don't remember the progress made, it's easily get disillusioned. Look at these two mountains here. Mount Everest on the left, Mauna Kea in Hawaii on the right. Which one's taller? Mount Everest, right? Actually, Mauna Kea is 4,000 feet taller than Mount Everest. Did you know that? It just said it starts 20,000 feet below the sea level. It's over 33,000 feet tall. That's 4,000 feet taller than Mount Everest. I mean, this is what we do, right? We don't give ourselves credit for progress already made. So you say, well, just this little thing. It doesn't even have snow on top. I mean, come on, you know? But progress made. Just Just another one. Here's another one. We're attracted to and remember what went wrong, not what went right. Because we're attracted to it, we pay attention to it. And because we pay attention to it, we remember it. And because we remember it, we use that as a predictor of what will happen next time, whether it is accurate or not. Now, that doesn't mean that bad things aren't happening and they shouldn't be noticed, or even that things aren't trending that way. The point is that to have an accurate view of your progress towards your hope, not just a vague sense of the standout, those highlights or lowlights that you've been experiencing, you need to pay attention to the whole thing. Steve Pinker, who I mentioned earlier, he says, here's another statistic none of you read in the paper this morning. 137,000 people were pulled out of extreme poverty yesterday. Do you know that? In fact, that has been true every day for the last 25 years. 365 times 137,000 times 25 years is 1.25 billion have been pulled out of extreme poverty on this planet since the early 1990s. Now, most of them are still living in poverty. It's not fair who is and who isn't, but that is progress that we have made. Can we give ourselves credit for that? Not slap ourselves on the back and say we're done, it's okay, but can we take that and use that as fuel to move forward and say, what's next? Or, you know, we can catastrophize around it. We can apocalypse around it and say, well, look at all those people. They're getting pulled up towards the middle class. They're going to be consuming more. That means all kinds of extra ecological demand and destruction of our planet. Yeah, you just identified another problem that we need to solve. I mean, would you rather those people stayed in extreme poverty so that they weren't bringing that consumer pressure onto our planet? I mean, that doesn't seem fair, does it? Yeah, we're creating problems with our realizations or our hopes. How are we going to solve those? How are we going to pay attention to them and do what's next regarding them? Hope is a hard and funny thing, but like Brené Brown said, and we mentioned this a couple days ago, we need hope like we need air. It's not only important to us individually, personally, to keep going, it's what we need in order to have hope as a society. It's how we are solving our problems. It's how, you know, we can imagine a world that could be better and to continue inventing it and creating it and believing in that. But sometimes hope takes longer than a lifetime. Sometimes it takes longer than a lifetime. Sometimes it takes longer than many lifetimes pulled together. I don't think our climate crisis will probably be resolved in my lifetime. I don't think a lot of our racial issues will be resolved in any of our lifetimes. I don't think some of the polarization that we're experiencing socially and politically right now will ever be resolved. I think they will ebb and flow as long as people are people. But how do we hang on to those things? How do we hang on to maybe our more personal ones that just we want to do something about it, but we just can't fix it now? Maybe it's around mental health. Maybe it's around a relationship. Maybe it's around a career issue. Hope is uncertain, and it may remain uncertain. Will you still hope? Sometimes your hope must extend beyond you and your plans to those who will follow, and they will have hopes, and they will have plans, and they will be the ones to carry it out. I started the very first week reading something from one of the very earliest followers of Jesus, who was reflecting on all those early characters from the Bible and how they had a hope around a promise, and they all moved towards it even though they couldn't all see it happening. And that person wrote this. I'm repeating this from that first week. All of these died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance, they saw and they greeted them. And generation after generation, uphill and downhill, they hoped. They hoped. That thinker was alluding to a very particular story and using the image from a very particular story in Moses' life, right? The one who started that Exodus, taking Israel out of Egypt. It's a story from the very, very end of Moses' life. Abraham's story that I shared last week was foreshadowing this point. And this is a plea for us to not just hope, but to continue to hope even when we can't see the end of it, even when the hope that we hold is generational. The book of Deuteronomy, the very last verses of the Torah, recount this story from Moses' life or Moses' death, and need to get the full picture, right? So Moses leads Israel into the wilderness to head towards the promised land. It's 40 years, figurative, like as long as it takes, two generations. No one who started the journey finishes the journey. And we get to that point and we read this. Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, and I am who I am showed him the whole land. I am said to him, this is the land that I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. Is this punishment for Moses for not doing a good enough job? I don't think so. I think trying to help us all understand that there are some things that are worth pursuing. There are some things that matter even though we can't see it happen. We only know we play a part. We will pass that baton on to those who follow. Another person who in my lifetime picked up that very same metaphor, that same story from Moses' life that the writer in Hebrews did and that Abraham foreshadowed, and he took that very same story that I just read to you from the end of Moses' life and cast another vision. This is Martin Luther King. His very last speech.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
As April 3rd, 1968, the day before he was killed in Memphis. In 2050 or in 2070, we may look back and be disappointed or have regrets about how things happened, but let us resolve now that we will not regret that we did not have enough hope. Would you pray with me? Nothing asks for more from us than hope. Nothing is less accomplishable by ourselves or when we just hold hands with others. Nothing asks us to reach out to that third strand, to that which is bigger and beyond, that can see and can be a part of, that can participate in all things and have a vision that we ourselves can not only not have, but not fully understand. I pray that you be with us now as you were with Moses, always, to give us hope, to help us face our problems and to name them and to have a vision for what could be done and to begin our work together. Each person here is carrying their own burdens, and we carry many together. May we not give up hope. Amen.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media, and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.